Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Burnham.
Yeah, it's the Tornado, Tony Pega.
And we got an action-packed show for you guys this week. Got a big-time boxer on, amateur boxer, Josh Gallo. He is going to be competing on March 6th down there in New York City. The Irish National Police Force is coming over. The Garda, they call them, over in Ireland. And they're going to be fighting for the Transatlantic Championship team. They're going to be the winner, I guess. So they're a pretty good operation. I know that I've written about it a bunch of times. I've been there for former events at Massachusetts Long. Every now and then they bring a couple cops, transit cops, up from New York City too to fight on the cards. So you know, it's a service industry feel there. They're all great guys. And, Bobby McGuire we've had on the show before, the coach. He's famous now. A couple shows on TV I saw him on. The whole show, I forget what it was called, but you know, it was like a game show type of thing where they tried to figure out, based on a few clues, who they were talking about, what kind of person they were talking about, based on like very little information. Anyway, we got Josh on. Tom's with us. How's it going, Tom?
All right.
And we got plenty to talk about in MMA this week. Basically, sounds like there's a little bit of a revolt going on. There's a lot of fighters in the news coming out against the UFC, and you know, there's a couple moves being made by the UFC that people think are pushing the line. Nate Quarry actually was one of the most recent ones to come out and really blasted us a bunch of different things. Former UFC fighter himself had some title fights. But Tate Pierre is not the only one who's talking about that either. He said, I always make a reference to my title fight against Richard Creekland. I ask people, what do you think a title fight main event in the MGM Grand on pay-per-view will be? People usually guess about $1 million. I'm going to take 10 grand, no bonus, no nothing. When I lost, I went back to my original contract of 5,000 to show and 5,000 to win. People are shocked by that. For Corey, he's a former Ultimate Fighter contestant, also a number one middleweight contender, and he does some fight analysis too. So it's kind of hard to see him as an outsider with an axe to grind. It sounds like he's coming from a place of, you know, experience there. He suggests, actually, that new hires should be assured of at least 3 fights per year in the octagon with a minimum base salary of $10,000 per fight. And he said that way you know that at a minimum you're making $30,000 for 1 year's worth of fights. It's tough, that's close to poverty wages, but at least it gives a fighter some consistency, knowing that they're going to have a job for at least a year. Nobody wants to show up at work knowing if they have an off day, they're going to be fired. Or he actually lost his sponsorship with the N1 Shoe Company, which the UFC instituted its current $50,000 fee, gatekeeper fee, they call it, for fighter sponsors. And so that's obviously rubbed in the wrong way that the UFC came out and talked about implementing uniforms for their athletes in the near future. Once again, that's just completely screwing over the fighters. Corey said, I was making more money from sponsors than I was fighting quite often. Take that away, you're saying once again that the UFC is all about the UFC. Now, to be fair, I don't think the UFC have uniforms that can't be personalized with sponsors. I think they're just looking for general uniform type clothing. And then there'll be a space for sponsors on their clothing, you know, it'll be UFC branded. But, you know, obviously they haven't really done this yet. They haven't set a policy except for one that I've told you. But Corey, as far as a solution, he actually kind of took a page from Michael, I think. I said, isn't best. He said, I don't think a fighters union is even remotely possible. I think it would take something like a major class action lawsuit. That could come in time. I wouldn't be surprised if there was one in the next 5 to 10 years because there will be so many guys retiring with nothing. They'll see that they did all this work and have nothing to show for it. So, that's Nate Corey. George St. Pierre is back out again talking about drug testing. And he's actually still saying that he's not retired, but he's definitely trying to attack the system, was his words. He says, there are a lot of people on drugs. I'm never sure 100%. The reason is I don't want to accuse any individual. If you accuse one individual, 20 others will arrive. What I want to attack, I want to attack the system. I don't want to attack the individual. People have to understand, I don't want to attack the UFC. I want to do that to help the brand, help the sport. And he also came out today, and there was a headline, I didn't read the article, but apparently he said he's not mad at Dana White, even though he had really railed on him for, you know, not coming out and saying exactly why he left the UFC, criticizing him for his reasons, like he knows what the real reasons are, but he doesn't. St. Pierre said, I think right now there is a big problem. When I came out with this, I got so many text messages from guys who are afraid to speak. Not even fighters, reporters are afraid to lose their credentials. But they tell me you're doing the right thing. We support you. And he said, it's not a retirement. I would call it more of a break because I don't know if I will retire or not right now. I just knew I needed a break from competition. And then Tito Ortiz and Ken Shamrock came out of the woodwork again. And they kind of piggybacked off of Nate Quarry's remarks. And Ortiz actually made the news recently for stepping down as Cyborg Justino's manager, Christian Cyborg Justino, because he wants the... to be a fight between her and Ronda Rousey eventually, and he knows that resignation came after the Cyborg of being a victim for performance-enhancing drugs, ridiculed her appearance, and criticized her business thanks for hiring Ortiz as part of her team. So right after that, he resigned. Ken Shamrock had to say as well on Friday pay. As we talked about last week, he just turned 50. But anyway, it's a common theme this week. Getting a lot of people coming out of the woodwork talking all this stuff. And it's a good point because the UFC and Dana White in particular have set up their organization so people are afraid to come out when they're under company control. And here you have a bunch of guys out of the company now, finally talking. They've all had enough time in the company where they're coming from a place where you should respect their opinion. There was another article I said on Bleacher Report that said that Dana White is a race car in the red, talking about how he's just taking way too many risks with what he's been putting out there, saying, really attacking the fighters in a bad way. And it's just not a good look for the UFC. And, you know, not a situation where Dana White's going to tone down anytime soon. It's not going to change. But
yeah, I think if anything, it just keeps getting worse as time goes by. I guess you probably read about that press conference where someone from upstairs came down and wondered if he was having a heart attack. Remember, he came down and said, are you okay? Thought he was having a stroke. And the reporters are just kind of sitting there shaking their heads saying, my God, this is the CEO of a company this large?
Right. And you know, these. There's one guy that just got back, Anthony Rumble Johnson, who's probably the only one in recent weeks who has spoken out from inside the organization. But even then, you know, he's probably pulling some punches. He was only talking primarily about performance-enhancing drugs and saying something about, you know, we should get paid like major leaguers get paid if, you know, you really want to stop this from being a problem. I think it's just a situation where Dana's hurting the organization more than he's helping it. Now you have Gilbert Melendez talking to Bellator. Dana came out and just basically in the middle of negotiations with this kid made some statements. Obviously, anybody would say, well, you know, why do I want to work for this organization? That's what they're going to say about me. I don't want to work out a contract. And I think that's going to be the major problem. People are going to start really seeing all these veterans of the sport coming out and taking pot shots at the way it's run, and they're going to look around. And they're not going to consider the UFC first and foremost. They're going to say, well, you know, maybe I should go somewhere else where I'll be happier and I'll be treated better, and maybe I'll have a more secure future. So, you know, there's a lot of good points being made, but, you know, don't count on Dana White to change anything. For the better, anyway. But we'll see how this develops. I think that remark about lawsuit is big. We have another story about Chris Weeden, talking about the UFC left him with nothing. And that's a guy that Dana White really liked and never had a bad thing to say about him. Well, he had lost a fair share amount of fights. So, for Nate Quarry to come out and say they'll see that they did all this work and have nothing to show for it, and then there's going to be a lawsuit, I think that's pretty accurate prediction. What do you think, Psychic Tom?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And it makes you know it kind of makes you wonder about that time frame. You know, within 5 to 10 years, at the rate things are starting to go now, might even be sooner. Because right. You hear the same thing coming. I mean, you look at Couture when he broke ranks, and it just keeps coming over and over and over and over and over again. So I know right now I would assume the organization's just assuming that they can still get enough talent to fight for whatever rate they say, but we'll see where it goes. This is interesting because when the comparisons for what these guys are making compared to the revenue that we estimate they're bringing in, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, the other side of it is the safety. We haven't really talked about that, but, you know, Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta was a big pissed about safety when they donated some money to that study on brain injury. But, you know, that's just for trying to find out what this does to you, you know, as a medical professional, what it does to you. It doesn't really solve the problem as far as, you know, these guys that are in the organization right now that are dealing with these issues, and you know, doesn't help them as far as providing any money for treatment in the future, or you know, boosting their health insurance, doing more testing after fights as part of that insurance. You know, there's nothing there to really impact the fighter itself, himself or herself, right now. It's just basically going to come out with a report, you know, as to how the average or how most of these fighters are doing brain-wise. So, actually, I think once that comes out, if it's very damaging to boxing and MMA, I think it might some lawyers start thinking, we got to pull the trigger on this class action lawsuit, start trying to contact people to... Because I think the biggest obstacle is just that there hasn't been any big stuff to point to and say, look, you know, they knew about this, number one, they have to prove that, that they were putting these guys through this kind of, do this to them. And then they have to prove that they purposely, you know, kept that quiet for damages to apply. And all these contract issues soared through. It would have to be something similar to what the NFL experienced. They settled that. Have to be that kind of a legal effort, which had to be pretty big for the NFL. But at the same time, you know, you have these guys out in Vegas. That's their base. They're going to have to do they own casinos out there. They pay all kinds of tax dollars, so obviously get some greased wheels there. They have a lot of friends in high places and politics and the law, so that would be another obstacle, I would think, that lawyers would think, well, maybe we ought to stay away from it. But 5 to 10 years is possible, I think.
Well, and we'll have to see how it goes. One part of me is optimistic, but then when I look at how many decades this kind of thing has gone on in boxing, where we've seen the low pay at the lower levels, because really, when you think about it, the only difference is in boxing, the top stars make far more than the top stars in MMA, but the guys at the bottom are still fighting it for almost nothing. And you look at the risk,
I can tell you times being at the gym and getting ready for helping guys hard, getting ready for a fight card, pro fight card, and then the trainer bringing the contracts in and seeing what these guys were scheduled to make. I remember looking at a 4-round fight, and I signed on for $500. $500.
Yeah.
And you figure the trainer, and the guy that was working as his lead trainer was also working as his manager. So he was I don't want to say double dipping like it's a bad thing, but he had an extra amount he was getting. And then you had the guy he was bringing on as a cut man. So the guy that he was bringing on as a cut man, who I knew personally, just passed away a few years ago. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant trainer, but the guy never got the breaks. And when he had a prior issue, a prior drug issue that really, really had hurt him, and even though you could tell he was such a brilliant guy, that reputation hurt him years later. And he was getting signed off for like $10 a round. So you get a 4-round fight, you're the fighter, you're getting $500. But right now, the trainer / manager is already getting almost 50% of that. And then, so at most, you're making $250. Then you get like your tax coming out of that. You got your sanctioning fees coming out of that. Yeah, pretty much, you're putting 4 rounds in, you may walk away with $150. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's not like you can just walk out of the audience and go 4 rounds. I mean, when you guys know how much training's involved in that, I mean, you're better off saying, would you like fries with that? It's an obscenity. And that's what makes me pessimistic about any change in the UFC, because we've seen boxing in this rut for so long that I don't want to think these problems are unsolvable, but I don't know. Perhaps they are.
What's really hard to say on there is similar to a card that we went to a few months ago. Now, that had a little bit of extra money in it because it was held at the Valley Forge Casino and because it was being aired on that one local Philadelphia channel. That pumped a little extra money into that card for the fighters.
Yeah.
But I remember going to so many cards, non-televised cards of the Blue Horizon. And you'd have a televised card in USA's Tuesday Night Fights, and USA would pump some decent money into that. So even your guys that were on televised, now obviously they're getting, you know, say you take a guy, and I'm just going to give an example, that started out at the Blue Horizon, Bernard Hopkins, long before he was ever world champ. You know, say if he was fighting a 10-round main event, just out the blue in a non-televised card, he might get, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 for that. But by pumping it up and putting it on the USA card, now he's getting 10, 12, 15, maybe 20, maybe more, because he started getting more popular. And even the smaller guys, that I was saying, I like that one night I was at the gym when the contracts were brought in. That was for a non-televised Blue Horizon show. At most, you're cramming 1,200 people in there, so you're not like you're going to be sitting there cramming, you know, a packed house. A packed house for that was 1,500 people. So, yeah, you got, instead of a guy at a four-rounder that was going to make 500, because the USA money was pumped into that, maybe he might get 900, 1,000, 1,100. Because extra money was being put into that card, because even though he wasn't on the televised portion of it. But still, you know, you're not going to retire on that.
Sure. But you know, you do bring up a good point, though, that really, I don't know who's to blame for it. I mean, if the money's not there, the money's not there, but I don't know. It seems to keep going in circles.
Well, that's
boxing. There isn't really somebody to blame. There's just too many promoters. You couldn't have
and, that. A lot of it is economics. You're putting on a fight card, you want to have, you know, you want to give the guys some bang for the buck. So, okay, me and Tom went to a fight card back in June of last year, and we've been separating fights on the card. All quality fights. Now, good thing. You got, okay, say there's 8 fights. That's 16 fighters you got to pay right there.
Right.
You got your 16 fighters you got to pay. And that night, I'll estimate there was maybe 2,000, 3,000 people there. You know, it's not a tremendously huge place. It's not a ballroom. Well, it was a ballroom, but I mean a ballroom. I'm talking about a place that you're going to Boardman Mall in Atlantic City or a big piece of, you know, 10. You need to build a place of capacity. It's bigger than it has. So you say you've got 2,000 people there. Unfortunately, you can't charge any more for that. If you had to charge more, a lot of people would say, well, I'm not paying that. I'm paying $50, I'm paying $70. I'm not paying any more than that. I can't afford that. So now it's the catch of money. So you try to pump it up, there's more money by raising the ticket prices. Or do you want to have as many people there or a lot of people there? Either way, it's going to work out to about the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Changing gears here. Nike is suing a popular MMA brand called Venom. Nike filed their lawsuit on January 8th, and they allege false designation of origin, unfair competition, and cancellation of trademarks. And this whole dispute is centering around the fact that Nike is claiming it's used the Venom name since 2002 and had it trademarked in 2005. The defendants, DBV Distribution, Inc. and Dragon Boat, have had the name Venom trademarked since 2008. So this is what I don't get. How can you have something trademarked when it's already trademarked? I don't get it. Don't these people have records? Can't they check and say, oh, well, we already have somebody with that trademark? But actually, Venom filed the suit first against Nike this past November, alleging Nike's use of the mark Hypervenom on soccer boots infringed on the Venom mark in Europe. And the lawsuit claims that defendants intentionally attempt to draw associations between Nike and defendants. For example, in addition to infringing products, defendants advertise, sell, or distribute authentic Nike product on their website. As of the filing date of this complaint, defendants were offering styles of Nike boxing shoes. Venom has actually sponsored some pretty big names. Jose Aldo, Carlos Condit, Wanderlei Silva, Lyoto Machida, and Mauricio Hua. And Nike, of course, is also involved in the sponsorship circles there, sponsoring Anderson Silva and Junior Santos, and obviously the current heavyweight champ, John Bones Jones. And it's pretty interesting. The writer of this article about this suggests that it might have something to do with the official uniform, since Nike is involved with the NFL. So, I don't know. See how that works out. Orlando Salido, big boxing match coming up. It looks like he's going to be fighting Vasily Lomachenko, a two-time Olympic gold medalist, and considered by many to be the amateur boxer in the history of the sport. He's actually only 1-0. That's going to be March 1st from the Alamo Dome on HBO World Championship Boxing. And that's also going to be the night of the rematch between Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and Brian Vera.
Now, here, when we were just talking about economics and money-wise, guys, now, how many times have we watched pay-per-view boxing cards? I'm not talking MMA here, I'm talking strictly boxing. On a pay-per-view boxing card, I'm Pacquiao and Bradley, the rematch. How many fights will be televised on that card?
I don't know, 4.
On average, on a pay-per-view boxing card, how many fights are televised?
Probably 3 to 4.
Yeah, 4. Maybe at 4.
Right. Most usually, the average is 3 to 4. Plus, you get like a couple 10-rounders, maybe a 10-rounder, maybe a 12-rounder or two, then your main event. Now, there's going to be 4 or 5 other fights on that card that are not televised. You probably get a couple 4-rounders, maybe a 6-rounder or two. Now, those fighters, if they were fighting on a non-televised, say, Blue Horizon card, that 4-rounder, that 6-rounder, might get $500. If they were fighting on a USA's Tuesday Night Fights or a Blue Horizon card, they might get maybe $700-$800, maybe a grand. The fact they're fighting a 4-rounder on a Manny Pacquiao card, we're going to get, most likely, a couple thousand. For, a higher chunk of change. It all comes on how and sometimes it's just by being lucky. And what we see earlier, sometimes what's sad about it is sometimes there are people that, and Tom was saying, you just don't go out there and step into a ring and fight a 4-rounder. And sometimes, sadly, there are some guys out there that don't know any other way to make money. Like that guy I was talking about a few weeks ago, wanted to go to his mother's funeral, which is in Ohio, and he was out on the West Coast. He took a fight in Utah just to get the money to go home, and he was grossly out of shape, and he had a heart attack and died. So by wanting to go to his mother's funeral, he basically ended up arranging his own. Because he knew no other way to make money.
Yeah. But it keeps shooting down the idea of a fighters union, so.
And what I think
they must have been something like that.
And you guys know I'm never going to take Dana White's side pretty much on anything, and I disagree with a lot of his philosophies. But I think what makes his shows harder to pay out higher purses. Now, I think he does do a good job in ripping his fighters off. But at the same time, you're going to have this big Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley fight coming up in 2 months. And Pacquiao and Bradley will obviously make the lion's share, multi-million dollars. And you're going to have the guys on the televised undercard, if they're not making in the 7 figures, they're at least making in the 6 figures. On the UFC cards, on the UFC pay-per-view, how many fights are there on average? What, at least 7, right?
Yeah.
And then you figure out how many fights are on the non-televised portion of that. So Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley, you're going to have 3 to 4 fights on the main pay-per-view card and maybe 4 fights preceding the pay-per-view card. UFC, you're getting 7 fights on the pay-per-view card. And how many preceding that? Another 4, another 5, another 6? You're already looking right there at 1,000 fights. You got to pay 24 fighters right there.
Right. Good point.
I hate to ever give anyone any credit, because still, even with all that, we still end up making these guys only a couple hundred thousand. Where you think guys Manny Pacquiao's going to make multi-million?
Well, I think they do make lots of zips, but only a few people who can claim them kind of target for a sponsor to pick. But it's just one of those things where it's more of a problem for the younger guys, and the new people, than it is for the established fighters who have names, and you know whether they win or lose. You know, people know who they are, so sponsors want to put their logo on that person. But guys who can't really get sponsorships and they're trying to break in, and they're good fighters, but they're at the starting gate. They're getting sometimes 6 million or less. Just doesn't cut it after you get through all those expenses you're actually paying to fight in some cases. So the UFC obviously relies on people like you got to have people at the start to get to the finish line. Basically, you have to have people that are prospects, champions. So I just think they ought to pay those people, like Nate Quarry said, at least $10,000 a fight. If it makes sense. But there's a heck. $8,000 is pretty much the average, I think, for the prospects and the young guns there. And it's unfortunate. Get back to boxing. Demetrius Andrade, former guest of our show not too long ago, he's throwing his hat into the money ring. And he wants Floyd Mayweather. And he's a native of Providence, now living in Atlanta. He defeated previously Baines Matarossian right after a week. That was 33, now is Matarossian. And Andrade is 20-0 with 13 knockouts. Now required to make his title defense, likely in April, because he's got the vacant title he got from Matarossian. That was actually in November, not a few weeks ago. So he's going to be making his title defense in April against Ryan the Lion Rose, who's 25-1-1. That's the WBO number one rated mandatory challenger. Mayweather said he's going to face either Amir Khan or Marcus Maidana on May 3rd in Las Vegas. And I think he has a mandatory challenger, too, that he's not even considering. But I think he's more likely to go with Maidana.
Yeah, I heard that Maidana was winning the Bain vote, but they were looking at Amir Khan, which really makes a lot less sense. Now, I was actually involved in a debate on this the other day, I wasn't really involved. I was more or less looking at other people's opinions on it. And basically what they were coming out and saying was, Maidana has greatly improved, over the last, year or so. He's got a bigger punch, but he's also a slower fighter. And he's a fighter that keeps a lot of pressure on Mayweather. He can cause some problems, but with his a lack of pure speed, could really play in Mayweather's hand. Khan, on the other hand, he's got the suspect chin, and he's got the lapses in his concentration, but he is a better, I wouldn't say skilled, but he is a pure boxer. He's quicker, he's faster, he's more agile. So that could, in turn, maybe give Mayweather some problems. I don't see that. And if he drops his right hand and gets wide open like he did against Danny Garcia, he called it that left hook. Yeah, Garcia, Mayweather might not have Garcia's punching power, but he's that much faster, and he might knock Khan's head off, you're supposed to keep me around. There are certain guys I wouldn't mind seeing they want to fight because of the challenge aspect to it. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. The one name we brought up is Arafami Lara, the very talented Cuban fighter. He's not exciting. And you might have a hard time selling tickets. But he's a tall, southpaw, quick hands, good defensive, very well-schooled boxer, long reach. Sounds pretty interesting. Another fighter that I think could have caused Mayweather a hell of a lot of problems would have been, obviously before he was injured, he was Paul the Punisher Williams. Just due to the fact that the guy was a 6'2" welterweight with like an 84-inch reach that would throw 100 punches around. How could that not cause you problems?
I wonder how he did it. He was in a major accident, I think, motorcycle accident was it?
Last I heard, he was still confined in a wheelchair. I think the man will not box again.
All right.
I mean, now you just hope for, hit the purpose. But actually, stylistically-wise, that he could have caused a lot of problems for Philly just because of his height, his reach, his southpaw stance, and the fact that he would throw so many punches per round.
Well, as far as Andrade, he says, message, I'm getting ready to take over boxing after Mayweather retires, he said. I want to match skills against his before he hangs up his boot. Let's unify the titles, Floyd. We can do it here in Atlanta, Las Vegas, or New York. You pick the place, just don't leave me hanging and retire without fighting me. This is my time. I don't think Floyd would ever fight again in Vegas, outside of Vegas, unless it was really big money.
I didn't hear the first part. Who was saying that?
Demetrius Andrade.
Okay. I think this is a good young fighter. Right now, I don't know if he's ready to step up that high in class. Even at Arizona, he's a good fighter. Food is right now a different level, and I don't know if Andrade has the amount of preparation that he needs.
That's a good point. But he's actually been there for a younger version of him, some experts. And, sometimes, even though you don't have that world-class experience as a champion, get the more than a puncher's chance if you get that same type of skill. And it could be a great fight. Anyway, here's a story about a guy we've talked about before. Really pissing a lot of people off now. And he is somehow still on friendly terms and doing business with Manny Pacquiao. This guy, Michael Conks, K-O-N-C, I don't know what nationality that is, but or what background this guy is from, but for whatever reason, he is just turning into a real asshole with managing the careers of several boxers under Pacquiao Promotions. It's a standard newspaper reported that boxing managers are unhappy with the way he is dictating several boxers under Pacquiao's boxing. Ernie Sanchez is an example. He was dropped from top rank sanction fight and that apparently triggered among the people in the film. Cancellation of Sanchez's fight came at the last minute. Sanchez was supposed to fight at the top rank 2 weeks. 2 days before, Sanchez was for Los Angeles. He received word that the fight was canceled. The group manager claimed Conks persona non grata, barring the Canadian advisor doing any business. The promoters and managers are angry because of quote, acts of injustice towards the Filipino boxing community. reportedly includes some young Filipino. And according to the wife of Filipino boxing champ Rachel Donaire, Kong Sisson's Lito can't fight on Pacquiao's undercards because the advisor tends to pull out fights he has no managerial rights with. This has been coming, Rachel Donaire said in a Facebook. Way before this, I have said he needs to with other people. Also been known to pull fighters off the isn't collecting any money from Rachel, because he wants to collect from all Filipino fighters. He's been rumored to be fighting in one of the undercards of Pacquiao's battle with Brandon China, but later found out that his fight against the victim was moved weeks earlier. Pacquiao's legal advisor, attorney Frank Fall, revealed during his interview that he's not the one to blame for his missions and finances, putting him in terrible tax woes. Fox has never showed Pac-Man's contract with Top Rank, making him a bit suspicious on the true intention of his life. Pacquiao's lawyer hasn't even seen his contract with Top Rank. Chino Trinidad, who followed Pacquiao's career way back from his budding days as a boxer, also expressed his disappointment on Pacquiao, who hasn't made any move to reprimand Collins, who Trinidad called the dark hour of Pacquiao's life. He meant to say horse. The dark horse of Pacquiao's life. As darkness continues to hover above Manny Pacquiao's head, I pray that one day I will still get to see the man I met 19 years ago. Until then, the fight for truth continues. So that's interesting. I know I've seen some reports about that before. Seems to just be attached at the hip with Manny in a lot of situations. I've heard stories of him sleeping on the floor at Manny's house. Just unbelievable background for this guy. And it's always some baggery involved in what he's doing. I know he had a real bad relationship with Manny's old strength and conditioning coach. And then Alex Ariza, I think it was. And then all of a sudden, Manny's not with that guy anymore. And I think on the 24/7 show, they showed some of that interaction when the two of them were together. And it was pretty intense. They definitely hated each other. Cox probably has a lot of enemies, but Pacquiao, for some reason, just sticks with him. Feels like he owes him. And I know Kong is just kind of the point of Bob Arum, Frank, so obviously Bob Arum, I don't see what he's having doing that. But scumbag that Manny needs to distance himself from. For some reason he can't. To find out that all his tax issues are because of this guy. That would have been the straw that broke the camel's back for me if I was back. I don't know what it is. Retire with some money. Dan Henderson is in the news again. He just had an interview with Fox 11 in Tucker. Testosterone replacement and a number of other issues. He was actually lucky enough to talk mentioned despite the says a lot of up and coming guys cut and so they play it safe and then they asked about if he felt that Shorten was the guaranteed contracts would help promote a more exciting fight. And he agreed that would help, but also since it would be difficult. He said, I would love to see more guaranteed contracts, but you can't do that. You don't know how somebody is going to perform year after year or fight after fight. And Henderson is actually preparing for his March 23rd rematch versus Shogun, Fox 1. He said, I could have finished it, but I felt like I should have. He's really hard-headed and hard to finish. I'm going to try to finish him this time, but I'm expecting to go 5 rounds. He's 43 years old, just signed a 6-fight extension to stay with the UFC, and says there are still interesting matchups that exist in the weight division and the light heavyweight. And specifically, obviously, he'd like to fight Jones. I'd like to fight John Jones and just see how the old man does. Also, with the open to a rematch versus Anderson Silva. But as for TRT, he says it definitely can be abused fairly easily. I've been saying it for years now, but they should really implement random drug testing, especially for asking for exceptions. Anderson has been doing it. So, you know, for somebody who's doing it to say that, it's pretty impressive. I spent most of my wrestling getting randomly drug tested at all times, and I think that's a really great way to dip this blood, not just testosterone, but anything. And as TRT is cheating, he says, no, I don't think so. If you take antibiotics when you get sick, and this just happens to be something that you take regularly. Also, as I mentioned earlier, Gilbert Melendez has reached an agreement with the Viacom-owned Bellator on a multi-fight, multi-year deal. The UFC has actually given the opportunity to match Bellator's offer, which is similar to the Eddie Alvarez situation. Something that lost you here. Goes through the signing, which set the stage for some super fights in the 155-pound division there. Michael Chandler and Eddie Alvarez have their first. Either one of those guys would be... I don't know what the UFC is. Also gave Bjorn Ripley, the CEO, a chance to get on his soapbox. He says, we're going to continue to sign the best fighters, whether they're from a favela in Brazil, a frozen Siberia, or they are fighting in the U.S. competition. The fighters are the ones who skip goodbyes or feeling cable television ratings, not feeling ratings by promoting Bjorn or Bellator. Promoting the fighters should be first and foremost. And in the night of Bellator, I actually saw, especially like 2 million viewers, and winning the distinction most watched event in professional history. Bellator 106 was the top rated show from last season. And a guy like Melendez on board, more eyes will be on the product than ever. May fans expect Bellator to continue trying to win off the big ones. We're going after everybody. I think there's a bigger picture. There are 2 major players in there who are way better for the fighters. One option, he has no power. When he has 2 options, that's actually coming from the CEO of the fight. Fighters can earn what they feel they deserve. Overall, we in the sport will be in a better place. You're going to see so much more of this as we move forward, guys. Coming from the smallest regions, or guys coming from the smallest regions where we find undiscovered talent, to the superstars from the UFC and the other guys we find in the United States. And all roads lead to, if he goes to the Bellator there, goes to Bellator from the UFC, Melendez will face
coming up sometime later this year, probably. Actually, that breath has just one tight meeting. If he sticks around, here's an MMA story and a football story. Actually, no, a baseball story. Baseball and a Philly story. How do you like it? Shane Victorino. And now he's from Philly. He actually having a hardcore mixed martial arts plan and starting to get into the MMA training. He picked up Fit recently, the same MMA workout routine that helped UFC superstars like Johnson Rick and Thiago Alves get jacked before their fight. Shane says that as an athlete, I take part in a lot of training programs at UFC to take things to a whole new level. Don Gold with the Winchester program tells us star Ronda Rousey uses the system too. Mike Dolce and the UFC Fit team just pitchers out there, watch out. Don't be throwing inside on Shane. And watch out when the bench is clear. Have some training in that regard. Interesting. Yeah, you do hear a lot about resign. He said, I can live with UFC President Dana White not liking me, but I can't live with using me to hurt someone else. I've taken abuse, and maybe I deserve some of it, but Chris is a beautiful person and a great athlete and doesn't deserve to be insulted like this. He also continued, I never said she'd die if she made 135. We just repeated what the doctor said, that Chris shouldn't make a career at 135. We offered a three-fight deal. They said no seven fights or no deal. Regardless, I won't stand in the way from the fans getting a fight they want, and I won't put Chris back. I'm stepping down as Chris's manager. And this actually came after Dana White said, Cyborg looks like Wonder Silva. So what I was talking about, remarks about her appearance.
But I think he's kind of speculating that he's that might not have already offered her a deal. Or they offered a three-fight deal, and they said seven fights. So they want her for more than three fights. That's what they want, three fights. So I don't know. Sounds like the number of fights is the problem, not Tito. But the problem is they want her at 130 pounds because That's the only way to make that they have on their roster right now. So for her to fight 7 fights at 135 pounds, that's asking a lot when it's, you know, a real concern for her to be cutting that weight down to that, according to her doctors. But we'll keep an eye on that one, see how that unfolds. If anybody can beat Ronda Rousey, I think it would be Cyborg. And as I said, Chris Lieben, back in the news for talking about how little he has at the end of his UFC career. He put out a tweet the other day saying, "I wish I would have drove a truck for the last 10 years. Then at least I'd have insurance to see if possible. The UFC left me broken with nothing."
Well, that's a sad story.
Yeah.
Nothing but an IRS tax bill.
Yeah. But this also comes after leaving that he spent most of his money on drugs. So, the best, I guess, example of a fighter as far as career management issues and all that. He's had his ups and downs. He had some suspensions. He actually was one of the first people who was ever granted a therapeutic use exemption for the prescription medication Suboxone, which is used a lot for people recovering from opiate dependency, namely OxyContin. Up ahead of his lawsuit, UFC 162. And he said he's going to return to coaching, but obviously that's not money. There, but I think he raises a good point. Thank you. All about the selection. For some of these guys, you know, if they're not going to be the absolute best and they don't ever see themselves as a champion or, you know, as somebody that's going to be the marquee fighter for the organization, sometimes it might be better off to plan B, you know, because you never know whether you're going to be in the fight or not paid enough. Shane Carwin's a good example. He was, at the same time, he was a fighter. In 6 figures a year already. Bonus was by fighting in the UFC every time, running the van with a job. Yeah. He was a good man. Our teeny bopper fans out there, playing a mixed martial arts fighter in a new TV drama. Jonas is from and the Jonas Brothers. He's actually going to be in the street, which centers on a former fighter played by Frank Grillo, who runs an MMA gym. Jonas is set to play Grillo's on-screen son, and the fighter who lands a contract to go professional with the fighting championship. Jonas actually disbanded the Jonas Brothers last year, and he really shows such a smash. But this Navy Street movie will mark his first regular role on the small screen since he co-starred with his brothers on the Disney Channel sitcom Jonas. And that's interesting, you know, he's going to be sounds like Randy Couture and Ryan Couture. But I doubt it would be them. They're that same exact synopsis there, scenario. We'll see. Tommy Morrison's son is about to make debut.
I heard that. What do you think?
Went on to the university, and now that his football career, a new pursuit, boxing, with his father now, who died last year at the age of 44, Tommy Morrison. And Tommy and Trey's mother dated in high school, his mother Christy. Her pregnancy ended their college basketball career, actually. Trey was born in 1980. He said, a lot of people always thought boxing, but football was my deal. I thought it was high school that I wanted to give boxing a shot. He says about his father, I'm nervous on having to fill his shoes. I feel like a lot of people are going to judge me on the first fight. That's cool. That's fine. But there's where it comes from. My dad. But I've got some catching up. So he's going to step into the ring for maybe a heavyweight four rounds. Renty of Oklahoma City. Renty is 21 and already has a record of 1-0. Morrison is 24. The same age as which his father, George, is the heavyweight title in 1993. Well, that's new to me. I didn't know he was that young. I'm 24 years old. And by the time his father was 24, Tommy had 35 pro fights. His mother, Trey's mother, said, can Trey take a punch? He better be able to. What do you want to compete? Compete lack of effort or work. I told him to go 110%. Very nervous about the fight, but I know he will work. It brings back a lot of emotional memories. And Morrison's trainer said, when I first got Trey in November, he couldn't jump rope and he had no footwork. Now he moves very well. My level of confidence is pretty high. Along with some quality guys. He is 3-2. He does appear to have legitimate boxing technique. So, wish him luck there. Typically, a first-time fighter is a $200 per article, but part of the show Saturday, about 2,000. During a televised interview with CNN's Larry, Tommy Morrison said that my priorities somewhere along the line got really screwed up. I didn't do the right things. I led a very reckless lifestyle. It's estimated that Tommy made $10 million as a fighter, but by 1988, the money was gone. And this is pretty exciting. The cause of death was cardiac arrest and multiple organ failure resulting from a blood infection. So, we will look forward to finding out how that goes for Tommy Jr. Right. As I mentioned, the UFC is talking about implementing a uniform. Dana White said that we're working on it, but nothing yet. There's multiple sources to deal with it. Major apparel company. Uniform will be head-to-toe, quite much walk-out shirt and hat, but in the UFC will wear. And this is what I said before, for Nathan's long, hey, Corey, and this is the Bleacher Report article where this comes from. It says there's several spaces on the shorts and shirt to preserve writers and managers to sell their own sponsorships. But outside those spots, UFC brand of product and the brand of the apparel company. And supposedly this deal would actually benefit lower tier preliminary fighters who have trouble selling sponsorships on their own. And White said he heard from many of his fighters who are game specifically doing Danzig, who appeared at his UFC against Joe Lozano and Trunks. But not as big as everybody makes it out to be. Those are the guys that are making tons of money anyway, and they make big money on sponsors. Lower level guys, they're making a bunch of sponsorship. We just saw the thing go down with Mac Danzig. He said, "I'm done. I don't want to deal with this anymore." You know how many fighters call me and say they don't want to deal with sponsorships anymore? What can you do? It's not as plentiful as everyone makes it out to be. And the idea, I guess, is to be more like the mainstream sports, NFL and NBA and baseball. Just trying to have one basic look. But I don't really think it's a good idea. Ben Askren is back in the news and calling out Dana White. He's still a bit salty, I guess, about the whole thing. Because basically, he's asking Dana White about Patrick Cummins, who's going to be facing Daniel Cormier at UFC 170. That's this weekend. We heard that news that someone was going to get the nod. He had a problem with it. Especially considering his situation. I have to put a remark here. I guess it was a picture that somebody had pasted. But he basically went back to call him Dana White, a fat bald guy, and just basically saying, you know, how does this guy just get to walk in with less than five fights, I think, to his credit, and get a big one apart when I can't even Todd Evans is in the back of the news because he looks like it's going to require a circle 6 months for him to recover. So that would be the reason why he hasn't been there in the first place. Just take for 6 months. It's a tough loss. Not sure if you... Cummins listed 4-0 in his MMA career, so... Does have four fights, all wins, but that's not a lot of fights. So, good luck. I'm going to need it.
I agree.
He's also yet to go to any decisions. He's got two submissions and two TKOs. But at the same time, he's an Olympic level wrestler, more experience and a higher competition level than Cormier is an Olympic level wrestler, I should say. So that's a huge step up for Cummins. But actually, there was a story that was out this week that apparently when they wrestled together, I guess they wrestled at the same school, Cummins said he made Cormier cry. Which is kind of hard to believe, but it's worth buying.
Yeah, I guess that would be the origin of this big feud, supposedly, that they have going on.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know if I talked about this week, but Dana White had some words for Alistair Overeem. Says he wants nothing to do with Dos Santos. He's literally hiding from JDS, but he had no problem calling out Brock Lesnar, who hasn't fought in 2 years and who isn't living.
He wouldn't be too injured if Lesnar came back, I guess he said, right?
Right. White said, I have a feeling this rib injury is going to last as long as it takes to get Dos Santos another opponent. That's what I'm willing to bet. This will be the longest rib injury ever. As soon as we get Dos Santos a fight, that rib is going to heal right up. And then he added, you say you want to be the best in the world. This is the number one guy. This is the effing gatekeeper. You beat this guy, nobody's going to question you. Shouldn't you be chopping at the bit for this, especially when you came in here and told the company what they deserve and how you're going to be the next champ? And he also criticized his effort against Spear. He said that he was think he could have finished Spear. He kept it tough. It was a crappy performance. Then he calls out some of it. It's not a great night. And asked if Overeem was the biggest bust in the history, Dana White said, that would be someone I believe in. Not there wasn't that. Mentioned Melendez in a contract dispute. That's it. We do have to recap last week's UFC fights and preview this week's C-170 card a little bit later, but it's right about time to get Josh on the phone for the interview and add him to the conference. Second here. And as I mentioned, the New York Fire Department boxing team going to be facing the Irish national boxing team. They call them the Garda over there in Ireland. And Josh is going to be on that card on March 6th down there in New York City. If you look at our website, on FightNewsUnlimited.com, we have a blog up right now, and it describes what's going on at that event. And all the particulars, how to get there, all that stuff. And for some reason,
yeah, as long as I could stay awake. the last two fights were not exactly scintillating. Would that be the word?
Yeah. I really didn't see Machida winning that fight.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
He just seemed to be, if it were a chess match, he was just one move ahead. I mean, there was no question about the decision, and it was almost one of those fights that after the first round, you kind of knew that the rhythm was set. I mean, not that Musashi couldn't have caught him, but it just was not the most exciting fight. And the problem is things didn't start till later, so I think I missed the third and fourth round. Kind of nodding out there a bit and got it. You know, woke up in the fifth, and I don't think too much had changed. So, and the semi wasn't really too exciting either. It was not the most exciting card.
No. Skype is giving me issues. Yeah, Machida just seemed to just play smart, just totally distanced himself, kept his distance, just didn't really engage much of that fight, except when he absolutely had to. or he was trying to get out of a bad spot. You know, I think he's way better. They didn't even really throw any head kicks.
You know, maybe once or twice, but once.
He didn't look like he was at his best. So while we're waiting, Tony, did you get any trouble from all this snow you're getting down there in Philly?
Well, I have
on the highway.
You know what? No, it was funny because last week I was a lot here in the show, and unfortunately I had to cancel my trip there. And usually when I go up there, I bump into a and it lives no more than 2 miles. Who I may see once a year, aside from the lot. I met him a couple years ago. I went to a gas station to fill my tank up, and the guy goes, I got a Lock Haven University sticker on my car. He goes, Lock Haven University? He goes, you go there? I said, yeah, I did. And he goes, yeah, so did I. He goes, you know, I'm older than you. He goes, well, you should go there. I'm like, 94 to 98. And he sees Lock Haven. He goes, you didn't box for Lock Haven, did you? And I'm like, well, yeah, I did. He goes, you know, she made Ken Cooper. I'm like, of course, Coop. Because he was my little brother in the fraternity that we were in. So we always talked, and usually I see him up there, and I was talking to him on Saturday, because I'm sitting in my house, and I'm like, you know what, I'm not going. I said, weather's been so bad, Route 80 is always a mess. I said, I'm not, this is risking the trip. You know, it's not worth it. My dad wasn't going. And this gentleman, Carl, well, there was a 50 to 100 car accident on the turnpike on that Friday, and his wife was involved in it. Now, thankfully, it was just a fender bender for her. He posted a picture saying, my wife's getting a new car for Valentine's Day. And so he didn't go up, I didn't go up, so I missed the Lock Haven, so it was kind of tough. That was the biggest downfall with the weather that I've run into. It has gotten me a few paid days out of work where I would sit home and just get paid to do nothing, which is always nice. But that's really with mine. You know, getting some work out, doing some shoveling. But it's keeping me from going out to some of the gyms. Because, like, I have the one gym that I go to, not a boxing gym, it's a regular, you know, fitness club right by where I work. But I don't want to go there after work because then I got to drive 45 minutes home when it's dark and a lot of bad icy roads. I mean, you know, I want to get home when it's with some light out. And then on the weekend, every weekend, I want to go in the one gym, and nope, it's either bad weather or icy, or I'm like, I ain't got in there. Well, I'm doing my workouts at home. I was doing some work in the bag the other day, and everybody knows me, I'm a left hook machine. And I was starting to get some twinging in my back, and my left, like, right below my shoulder blade, my left shoulder blade. And I'm like, well, I still got one round to go. And instead of just saying, let me back off a little bit, I started feeling it. And when I started feeling it, I started feeling like kind of like my old self. Next thing I know, I'm cranking these hooks like prime Gil Frazier. And then I'm done, and I'm like, oh, great, now I can't see because I got this stiff muscle that's killing me. So I'm getting blown for this shit. But no, that's really been about it. Just working out, doing just my regular job. Counting my days out for Florida, and I think we're down to 23 days now.
Wow.
23 days for Florida, and another month more than that to Vegas.
Nice. Yeah. We got Josh lined up here.
Hello.
Hello, Josh.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. How's it going?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you loud.
Okay, good. I'm at work and I'm at the firehouse. We just had a run, so we're getting back now. But if you want to do this in 15 minutes, or we can do it now.
Yeah, we can do it now.
Okay.
All right.
4:05 p.m. 10 a.m.
So obviously you got a lot going on. what you been doing to get ready for this big fight on March 6th?
Okay.
What have you been doing to get ready for the fight?
Well, I've been training since my last fight. I haven't stopped. And believe it or not, I went down to Argentina to train down there at my father's old gym. It's summer down there when it's winter here, so I figured I'd do road work down there. And same as you know, I cross with my wife, and I hit the fight upon a boxing gym on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
And do you know anything about the guy you're going to be fighting?
Well, I did a lot of research on him. You know, like the Art of War says, you don't know your enemy. I looked up online on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all social medias I was looking for him. I bought a couple of pictures of him, and I'm going off of that.
And aren't you first in the box?
Well, my father was a boxer. My father was a professional boxer in Argentina. He was the 1959 Argentinian champion. And he was growing up with him, and you know, he showed me a little bit. My mother never wanted me to do it. But he was just in the environment, you know, just being aided and trained, just in shape.
And does it help with the firefighting at all as far as, well, obviously, if you had the...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Just being in great stress, you know, as a fireman, you need it. You never know when you need that last push, and, you know, you have to get a brother out and somebody else, and you can make it to the top if you have to.
Right. So, what's the whole experience like being a member of the FDNY boxing team and participating in these type of events?
You know, it's an honor. It's a privilege to be on the Fight Department boxing team. You know, it's an incredible cause. You know, I'm in the military, and they're building homes with heroes. That by itself, you know. If I went in there and got beat up, it'd be worth it, you know. And competing at this level is a good feeling. A lot of good coaching and training and excitement, you know. And I'm also part of another gym by where I live, which is Bray Longo's and Chris Wyman's power gym. It's an MMA gym, and those guys know what I'm doing, and they've been helping me out, you know, just because I'm a fireman, and it's for a good cause.
MMA fan.
Yeah, I was only a boxing fan so recently, and I got this MMA, and it's an amazing sport, it really is. I train with the guy, you know, Mike Geis, and Ralph Rice out of Lindenhurst, and he's a 6'4", 240-pound guy. He helped train me, and he's amazing, you know? It's just it's a whole different sport. It's amazing.
Yeah, and actually, you know, you should see more boxers and MMA fighters working together, because I think even today, boxing level in MMA, not good.
Right, absolutely.
A lot of help in that category.
Yeah.
But as far as you know, you're fighting now, what's the most important thing to do in your fighting?
I think the most important thing is conditioning. You know, you have to be ready to give everything you have. You know, you want to empty yourself. You don't want to look back and say, I could have done a little more, I could have trained a little harder. You know, you want to give everything you have each round.
How about, tell us, what was the toughest fight you've had so far? Why?
You know what it is? It's more mental. It's pretty much a fight you take within yourself. You know, the uncertainty and, you know, the doubts that you have. They all line up like a firing squad ahead of you. And that's pretty much what you expect to have as yourself.
And what do you enjoy most about boxing?
I definitely enjoy training for it, and you know, the routine of it, and being in shape for it, the uncertainty of it. Anything can happen. You know, what I say, 1,000 rounds.
And, do you have any fighters that you have to watch when they fight? Any favorites up there of all time and current fighters?
Well, I grew up watching Mike Tyson and just watching my father, you know, shadow box as a kid. And just those movements, you know, just the smooth, flowing water movements that they had. Not with YouTube, obviously, it makes everything so much easier to learn, just to see how people did things back then and now.
I would these guys over there from Ireland, this is the first time that you've fought this boxing?
Yeah, so it's my first time for me. You know, the Irish have always produced great boxers. You know, they're part of the foundation of boxing. Yes, you know, strong chain, you have a hard fit, you don't give up. So it's gonna be good. But you know, we'll fight anywhere, anybody, anytime, whether it was that's you know, our fight department motto, and our coach, you know, Bobby McGuire is a great guy. He has us all geared up, ready to go for this.
Yeah, we've talked to him a couple times on the show. I met him in person at the Boston events there. And
he's an amazing guy.
I remember you guys talking about going over there to Ireland. Was that the same team that you guys faced when you went there?
You know, there's depending on timing, the team is varies. You know, for each bout, each card, there's guys that come in, it's amazing. And it's hard to have, you know, realistic, you know, why kids, the job. It's hard for someone who's, you know, doing it. So we have a good rotation of guys that come in and out and train and do it. And, you know, they have memories forever.
And what else can you tell us about this event?
Well, this event is on March 6th. It's at Webster Hall. It's a legendary neighborhood and a legendary place. You know, as a kid, I grew up... you know, clubbing, you know, and, you know, now that later in my life, you know, I'm going to go over there and fight there, which would be great. I think the ticket is $25 a day, the rooms are $50. It's Thursday night in, you know, East Village. What more can you ask for? You know, guys are coming in from Ireland and an Irish month. It's pretty fantastic.
Right. What kind of competition do those guys have? Do you know? Do they fight other teams over in Europe a lot, or is this a?
Well, you always believe that your opponent is training just as hard as you are, and not harder, and they're at a high level of competition. I know that some of those guys compete in the world by police team. So yeah, they're coming in ready. No one's taking anything for granted yet. Everybody's training as hard as they can every day.
And what are the guys like on the team? Are they pretty much all seasoned veterans of the team? You got any new guys?
We have guys that have less than a year on this job, and guys that have, you know, 19 years on this job. So you, with a wide spectrum of time, the guys have been here. But you know, we're ready to compete the team. We have a good time together, playing together. Yeah, we punch each other in the face and then laugh about it later.
Yeah. Right. It's all about. And what got you to be a firefighter in the first place?
I was in the military. When I got out of the military, I got into healthcare business, and it was a little soft, you know, for me. I wanted something that was more, had more action, you know, more, was more rewarding. Not financially, but ability to provide. And the fire department called, and I answered.
All right. And how about your best moments so far in the sport of boxing?
Well, you know, there's a lot of you come in every day, you never know what's going to happen. It's about saving a life, you know, especially the life of a child. And I was lucky to have that opportunity once to bring a child back. Life, and you still see that kid every day. Well, not every day, every once a year. some fine and say hello. I was happy to know his family stayed down. Yeah, just watching the trial go, and I was part of that team. You know, it's great. There's nothing more rewarding than that. That's the only thing I have from this job. I'll take that.
Anything else you want to add? Anybody you want to thank or say hello to out there?
Well, you know what? There's a lot of people I want to thank. There's definitely my wife for her support and friends from the firehouse. And, Ralph Weiss from Lindenhurst and Power MMA and Bobby McGuire. I mean, the list could go on forever, but, you know, at the end of the night, we're all going to, you know, high five and talk about how we did this for Homes to Heroes. You know, that's what we do. And, you know, just remember that it's troops that aren't home yet. So we'll wait for them and give them a good show when they come home.
All right. Yeah, it's a great cause. I definitely I have a lot of my own friends coming from military school who have served.
It is a great cause. It really is.
Actually, I don't know anybody who was killed in action. So, you know, I know plenty of people who were over there who saw people get killed.
Right.
Come home hurt.
Yeah, these guys are doing it every day. At least, you know, I leave my work after a 24-hour shift and I go home to my own bed. These guys, you know, I'm making their beds in the desert and being away from their families. I mean, I can't imagine what that's like being, you know, away so long from those families.
Mm-hmm.
So I give those guys a lot of kudos for what they do.
All right. Well, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, final thoughts, March 6th. Our opponents are going to represent like they always do. We're going to put on a good show. And I think we're going to have a good time.
Well, it was great talking to you. We'll definitely keep an eye out for the results.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
I wish you the best of luck, but it sounds like you don't... Sounds like you'd be all right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You
okay. All right, you too. Bye-bye.
So that's Josh Gallo from the FDNY boxing team.
I know they did something with guys from the Yankees, not with the fire department or the police department. It's just... you know, the old gym at Philadelphia had a good chance to kind of take on the Irish team and something like that.
Somebody's breathing into the microphone or got some going. What is that? Who's doing that? Is that you, Tony?
What am I doing?
Stop. All right. What were you saying?
No, I was saying, No, it's a good thing they did. I said, I know years ago, I knew guys in Philadelphia, amateurs. It wasn't a fire department team or a police officer team, but they would do that. They would have the one gym that had a bunch of amateurs in Philadelphia, and they would have a competition with the Irish national team. And you know, it's a good thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to try to get to this one, just because I'm half Irish and I love watching the amateur boxing with these guys. They're good, too. I mean, the last time I went to Foxwoods for New England Law Enforcement Battle of the Badges versus FDNY there, I think we only had like 2 wins for New England.
Wow.
The New York guys just cleaned house. And you can tell, like, they take it seriously. They're all in shape. They all look like they know how to fight. I think there was, like, maybe one guy who was, you know, fat, but he was a good fighter. Like, you know, don't let the fat fool you on that guy. So it's always a good show. They definitely take it seriously. Bobby McGuire is a great coach. He knows a lot about the sport. And, you know, you can really see that he connects with the fighters when he's giving them advice in the corner. And this is a guy who... everybody's trying to say hello to him at the event and shake hands with him, and he's got duties that he's got to carry out. He takes that seriously. You know, he comes out and he supports every fighter. And does a really good job. So And then they're, on top of that, they're doing this charity, so more power to them. I don't think they'll be able to go this time, but definitely next time they come up to Boston, I'll be there. But anyway, that's March 6th, and it's on our blog if you want to check it out. We've got a couple of events to talk about here in MMA. Last week's UFC Fight Night 36, we talked about the main event a little bit. Sleeping guard Mustafi by a unanimous decision. I didn't think Mustafi really fought up to it. Sheena really complimented you. That was a very boring fight. But anyway, Sheena did walk away with the win. He's didn't really put himself into double contention again, though. So, looks like he's going to continue to be a gatekeeper. We had Ronaldo Souza versus Francis Carmont. And that was a win for Souza by unanimous decision. Carmont's another one of those guys who reminds me of Czech Congo. Just, he's got all the physique, but none of the skill.
Yeah, just a ton of heart, good conditioning, but just the skill level's just not there at this point.
I shouldn't say skill, maybe execution more than anything.
Yeah.
He does obviously have the skill, or else he wouldn't be there. But just didn't execute, so very good, Souza. But then again, Souza is really big on submissions, and Carmont didn't get submitted, so I guess he's got that going on. We had Eric Silva, took less than a minute to knock out Takanori Sato. Good shot there.
Yeah, that was no surprise. You kind of got the feeling his opponent was supposed to lose that.
Right. And then we had Nicholas Musoki beat Discarde Andrade by unanimous decision. We had Charles Oliveira beat Andy Ogle by triangle choke submission. That was in the third round at the 240 mark there. Joe Proctor took out Cristiano Marcello by unanimous decision. We had Rodrigo Dan beat Ivan George by unanimous decision. Francisco Trinaldo beat Jesse Ronson by unanimous, split decision that one. And we had Yuri Alcantara beat Wilson Reese by split decision. Felipe Arantes beat Maximo Blanco by unanimous decision. Eldemar Alcantara beat Albert Pumanov by a split decision. And finally, first fight, Zubeira Kokhlov beat Douglas Silva by unanimous decision. So once again, we have a card with a couple of stoppages. Knockout by Silva and a submission by Oliveira. Everything else was good. But Brazil is a different place, so I don't think fans were too disappointed with four fights down there as they would be up here, maybe, in the United States. Because obviously, you know, that's where Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is found. It's kind of watching the rolling around.
But at the same time, you would like to see a few more stoppages in the cars like that. I don't know whether it's an odd to the matchmakers or, like Nate Quarry said, you know, before I Dan Henderson, you know, people are fighting safe. They're thrown out.
And, of course, the big main event on Saturday, Ronda Rousey versus Sarah. 8-0, Sarah 7-0. I don't think people are giving Sarah enough credit, but I hope they don't think that Ronda's taking this one lightly either. She's definitely ready for this one, but McMahon's a tough cookie. She's no cupcake.
Yeah, no, I didn't see the countdown yet. I'm going to have to get it on the internet. They had it on Fox 2 Wednesday night. And I don't know how they're hyping it. From what I can understand, it'll have to be Sarah's wrestling skills, but there's just so many variables that we don't know about Sarah. I don't know what her stand-up game is like. I don't know how her submission game is. I mean, I know that she has a silver medal in wrestling in the Olympics, but how is her MMA wrestling? I mean, I think Rhonda is just operating at another level, and I'd say the same thing about anyone who's performed as good as Rhonda has. Until she's beat, she's got to be the odds-on favorite.
Oh, definitely. But I think we might see Sarah take it a couple rounds. You know, if today's a beat, definitely appears. I'm looking at a picture here on Sherdog. She's got some huge biceps. She likes to turn the hooks. Biceps. I don't know. You know, she obviously got the wrestling too, but I don't think she's going to want to go on the ground with Rousey because she's not going to want to get armbarred. So.
Well, if she could stay on top and just be smart enough to avoid those armbars, but the problem is Rhonda's so good off her back that it's just going to be a tough night for Sarah.
Then we have the co-main event, heavyweights Daniel Cormier versus Patrick Cummins. Actually, I guess it's light heavyweights now because he's cut down to face Rashad Evans. Then we've got, but I think actually, this one's going to be a heavyweight fight. Doesn't say.
Well, you know, I heard that the odds, now I haven't checked the odds recently, but I believe that Cormier was minus 1,100 at one point, so I think that would tend to discourage much betting on it.
Right.
Well, see why.
So I guess, you know, if you want to bet on the miracle for Patrick Cummins, you'd have a big payout if you want.
And then there was another fascinating article I read somewhere that, assuming that Cormier loses, I mean, he's losing to a guy that does have a good wrestling background, but he hasn't really been too active, and it's almost like, can the man in the street walk into the cage and succeed against someone? So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm just actually looking at Sarah McMahon's record right now, and I didn't see anybody, caliber of fighter Rhonda's face. The only one that really even rings a bell to me is Shayna Baszler. She beat Shayna Baszler on July 28th, 2012, at Invicta FC 2. That was the main event. She's had one fight in the UFC. She beat Sheila Gaff by TKO first round with six seconds in the first round.
You know the one thing I liked about her attitude was she was asked, do you think you're ready for this? Do you think you should wait a couple years? And her answer was that the fact that Rhonda is not going to stay where she's at. In 2 years, Rhonda's going to be better than she is now. It's not like Rhonda's frozen in time, so if not now, then when? And I don't think Sarah's going to be any younger 2 years from now. So I really like the way she put it in perspective like that.
Yeah. That's always good. We also have Rory McDonald versus Damian Maia. Should be a really good play. Donald is 15-2, Maya's 9th. Also, I did mention Cormier, Pat Cummins is 4-0. That is a light heavyweight. Don't see that one going Cummins' way, but miracles happen. So, still the first weight cut for Daniel down to 205. So, if he's not doing it right, he struggles there. But translate to a bad performance on fight night. So eye on that. Yeah, Kyle versus Goldberger. Kyle is 25-9-1. Easy. Now, if I look at this fight, I figure this fight already happened, so. Guys are very similar style and records. Length of time in the UFC, I guess Pyle has a phone medical on that, but they've been around long enough where they should have fought already. We got Stephen Thompson, 8-1 versus Robert Whitaker, 11-3. We have another physical fight, Jeff the I, 10-1, fighting Alden Davis, 15-5. Raphael.
Yeah. I think Jessica's got to be my upset of the night. So I mean, she's a slight underdog. So you heard it here first.
I wouldn't say she's an underdog from her record. I mean, only one loss.
Davis is like -135 or something like that. So it's fairly close. Jessica's a slight underdog, but. You heard it here first, and she'll rise to the occasion.
All right. Rafael Asensio, 21-4, will be fighting Pedro Munhoz, who's 10-0. We got Aljamain Sterling, fighting Cody Gibson, 11-3. Max Kostny, 17-4, fighting 11-2. Eric Cope, 13-3, fighting Rafael Yellow Oliveira, 7-7. And the first fight of the night will be Ernest Chavez, 6-0, versus Justinus Cedeno, who's 9-2. Those are the guys probably making less than 10 grand. That's it for MMA for me. We've got a little bit of boxing to talk about, I'm sure. I know we've got plenty of fights this week. That's a Mike Tyson card.
Well, let's see what we got coming up. Last week, we really didn't have much. We had a five-man fight card that just a lot of promise and just didn't produce, and sometimes you get that. Sometimes you get good fighters. You know, we had two pretty decent prospects, and it wasn't that great. You know, it happens. But let's look. We'll do a quick recap of what we had last week. While I'm doing that, I do want to touch on something that got some good news today, and always makes me happy to hear things like this. We got a fight card coming up on campus of Temple University coming up in early April, a week before I go to the Manny Pacquiao fight. And what we're going to have here is Steve USS Cunningham, former guest of ours a couple times, and he's fighting heavyweight now. He is stepping up to fight a guy who's from Delaware, and I've never seen him fight personally, but I've heard the name a number of times, and one of my Facebook contacts represents this fighter. His name's Amir Mansour. He's a big heavyweight. So now the question on this one is with regards to can Steve outbox and outfight someone that's going to be so physically much larger than him. So let's quickly look at the main event from last week. Chris Algieri fighting in his hometown. And Chris, 19-0, 8 knockouts, not a big puncher. What is facially and style-wise, and I shouldn't say style-wise the way he fought, but the way he kind of held his hands and moved, he kind of looked, he resembled a Arturo Gatti a little bit. Was a very large fighter for 142 pounds. He looked much larger than Emmanuel Taylor, who weighed 141. Algieri, pretty much, and Taylor was 17-1 coming in, a very good prospect, who I've seen several times, and he just could not get his hands off in that fight. And Algieri just moved, outboxed him, and won a unanimous decision. Let's quickly look at what we got coming up this week, and then I want to go back to this Steve Cunningham, Amir Mansour fight, just because it's a fight that I'd like to go to. About, 40 minutes from my house, so it must be too bad. So tomorrow night, Friday night, let's see what we got. We got one of my personal favorite guests, so I'm sure you guys will agree with this. The Road Warrior himself, Glenn Johnson. An ageless wonder. He's still trying to get a rematch with Bernard Hopkins 17 years after they first tangled. And Glenn Johnson here, 53-18, only been stopped one time, and that was by Bernard Hopkins. He has 36 knockouts. He is coming off a unanimous decision.
All right. Back.
Hello.
90 seconds left, Tom.
You too. Hey, Kim, well, let me just yell. We got Glenn Johnson, Jaime Velasquez. Tomorrow night, we got Hammer and Hank Lundy on Showbox. Good friend of mine. He's fired up. He's ready. I don't think we'll have enough time to get to Saturday, but let's see if I can get it doing real quick. See if we've got any HBO or Showtime cards. And next week I'll talk about the Cunningham. Okay, lady, calm down. I'm trying to type in Saturday. I'm in Nicaragua, down to the States, United Kingdom. Not interested in that one. Not interested in that one. Well, I sure as hell got one in Bethlehem on Saturday. I don't know if that was happening with the fans. Don't know anybody on the card. Maybe I might run up there. I don't think so, but I could. Nothing really interesting looking on Saturday. Very sad to hear that. Another week without any HBO or Showtime. So Friday night, two cards. Don't forget to watch them.
All right. Well, we'll talk about them next week and wrap them up. And that's all for us. Until next week.
All right.
Hasta la vista. We're still on, though. Oh, yeah. I guess we don't need Tom. So if you wanted to add anything else, I guess now's the time. You good? Oh, I guess we lost Marie. All right, so until next week, that's all, folks.